The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
At Pragertopia.com. This is our chance to connect like never before. Go to Pragertopia.com or click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on AM 1420, The Answer.
Welcome indeed. It is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer, on a Thursday, 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, 14th morning of the third month, year of our Lord, 2024. That makes it Pi Day, by the way. Don't get excited, Seth. It means it's a mathematical thing. It's how do you figure out the circumference of a circle, I think, is what pi is used for. It's
cherry?
No, it's not cherry.
Blackberry.
No, it's not blackberry either. It's something about figuring out the circumference or the diameter of a circle. That's what it's used for. That's all I know. It's 3.14, and I do not go past those digits in my understanding of pi. You understand why I was an English major now and not a math major, because I do not know how to use pi. I do not know what pi was created for. I don't know why it's a thing in mathematics, and I never will understand it. But if you are going to talk about pi, I'm going apple a la mode, just to throw that out there. All right, wow, we've got a very important show lined up for you this morning. Coming up in about a half an hour, we're going to talk to a senator in the United States Senate. He is from the great state of Ohio, and he beat a host of other challengers to replace Rob Portman. And, of course, I'm speaking of J.D. Vance. Senator Vance will join us at 9:35 this morning. At 10:10, we'll talk to Dr. Everett Piper about matters in the culture war that are of great importance to all of us, as we do each and every Thursday. And then at 10:35, Kellyanne Conway will be back, former senior advisor to the President of the United States. Kellyanne Conway wants to talk to us about a couple of things in Ohio, including supporting Reggie Stoltzfus in Ohio 6 for state representative, and including talking about the Senate race between Bernie Moreno, Frank LaRose, and Matt Dolan, which is something we're going to be talking about very shortly here as well. So three great guests. And by the way, shorter show today than normal because we do have NCAA March Madness basketball. We have Kent State basketball. They've got a game at 11 o'clock, so we're going to be cutting out an hour early at about 10:45 for the pregame, and then Kent State basketball here on AM 1420, The Answer. So a little bit of a shorter show, but we have a lot of stuff that we have to get done within it, and I'm looking forward to doing all of it with you at 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Let's not waste time. Let's get started with our pledge. Patriots, stand, face your flag, put your hand on your heart, and join us for this. If you are a radical, left-wing Biden supporter, if you are a Marxist, if you are not a believer in what this great country stands for, then don't fake it and pretend to salute that flag. Instead, take a knee so that we can identify you as the Marxist dog that you are. For those who believe, however,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, so we're going to start off with TikTok real quick, because TikTok is obviously bad. TikTok is Chinese. TikTok is, it's owned by a company that is run by the Chinese Communist Party, and that's the reason a lot of people are saying we shouldn't have it anywhere near American kids on American phones.
I like the ban because there are two reasons why. It's really popular among people that I despise, i.e. influencers, which are worse than communists, and it's also a mass persuader. If you look at every bad idea that is plaguing America, racial division, gender hysteria, these stupid stunts kids do, it's direct. These things are directly injected into a generation of Americans with unformed brains. So we do need to sever the connection between TikTok and the communists. It's not about ownership. It's about control, right? It's like owning TikTok is meaningless if the Chinese are in charge.
All right, so that's Greg Gutfeld saying, you know what, I like the idea of banning TikTok from American phones, either forcing the sale of TikTok to a non-communist company, or a company that isn't essentially run or owned by or operated by the Chinese communists. And this passed the House, by the way, yesterday, the forced sale or the ban on TikTok, 352 to 65, 15 Republicans and 50 Democrats voted against this ban. Now, you just heard Gutfeld say why he supports the ban. Here's Senator John Kennedy. What are you going to do if and when this thing gets to the Senate side now that it has passed the House?
President Trump, and it's not even TikTok. The issue is the Communist Party of China. And as I've said before, I wouldn't turn my back on the Communist Party of China if they were 2 days dead. And you shouldn't either. TikTok is owned 100% by a Chinese company called ByteDance. And ByteDance, the Chinese company, is controlled by the Communist Party of China. And the fear, of course, is that the Communist Party of China, through ByteDance, will use TikTok to access our data, to conduct cyber espionage, to advance Communist Party of China views.
And that is exactly why we should ban TikTok, right? Because we shouldn't allow Chinese communists to have access to our data, and we should not allow Chinese communists to be able to influence a young American impressionable minds with their pro-Chinese Communist Party propaganda. Right? That's why we should ban it, except for the fact that we shouldn't ban it. Why? Newsmax host Carl Bigby explains why. And we seem to have a freeze here. We're going to try this again.
In order to stop the influence of China, the U.S. government, or at least Congress, has become more like China. Now, the House voted overwhelmingly, 352 to 65, to ban the app in the U.S., the app TikTok. I'm super nervous about the precedent that this sets. And Reagan warned us about government overreach.
The most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
I'll be honest. At first, I thought, hey, maybe this might be a good idea to cut off China's influence. But then I got to thinking about it. The language in this bill, at least what I've read, is super broad and will absolutely, absolutely 100% be used to shut down media that whoever's in charge doesn't agree with. This is a Trojan horse.
They've described the TikTok application as a Trojan horse. But there's some of us who feel that either intentionally or unintentionally, this legislation to ban TikTok is actually a Trojan horse.
Look, I am no fan of communist China. They are raping the globe of natural resources at like five times the carbon footprint of everyone else, and they're using slaves to do it. We should definitely be doing everything in our power to break their back. But think about what Congress just did. They just banned an entire social media platform. This will be challenged by the end of the week if it even gets to the Senate. TikTok is just a symptom, though, of the larger problem. I'm less concerned about China than I am about an entire American generation that cares more about their own vanity and access to stupid dance videos than they do about American superiority and security and patriotism. Why are we not willingly boycotting this app? I'll tell you why. Because our schools and our pop stars and our social icons and all those other people are all conditioning us to hate America. I mean, West Point just today, like I said, removed honor, courage, and duty from their mission statement.
All right, we'll stop it there because I think the point has been made. At the very beginning of what Carl Higbee said there, he's spot on. It's the precedent that I'm worried about here. It is the precedent. I am no fan of Chinese communists either. I'm certainly not a fan of TikTok. And so many of the ridiculously stupid and oftentimes dangerous things that it promotes. But I am less a fan of an overreaching, massive government telling us what we can and cannot have on our phones. Because if they can tell us you can't have this on your phone because it's owned by Chinese communists, they can then say, by the way, look what we did with the Chinese Communist Party TikTok app. So therefore, we can take this off of your phone as well, or take this away from the American consumer as well. You know that if you give the federal government an inch, they take 50 billion miles. And this bill, which Thomas Massie was included in that little piece there from Newsmax, was talking about it being a Trojan horse, is a Trojan horse. Because if you give the president the broad power, and that's what this bill does, to ban certain things like this in the name of, you know, the national interest or the interest of consumers not having their data compromised and all of these kinds of things, if you give him the power to do that, to limit what you can see here when we all unite against communists, they will take it and use it to say, this is also bad for you. This is white supremacy. This is domestic terrorism. This is, you know, all of the things that they have used the three-letter agencies in the United States government and the Biden regime to target American citizens. You know, the weaponization of the DOJ, the FBI, the NSA, the IRS. The weaponization of government against us based on our own ideological points of view is terrifying. They have targeted Catholics who go to Latin Mass. They have targeted parents who go to school board meetings. They have targeted citizens who went to a rally on January 6th and didn't do anything. They've targeted people all over the place, and they've said these people are domestic terrorists. They've set up surveillance of people for doing these things. They've gone to banks and demanded bank records to see what American citizens have bought. And if they bought things like Bibles, and if they bought things like guns, you know, they're being targeted by the federal government because they don't trust people of, you know, conservative ideologies. So the point being, if they can ban an app like TikTok, which generally enjoys broad support, and when I say broad, what did I say the numbers were? 352 to 65? 352, bipartisan. Republicans and Democrats got together and all agreed that TikTok should either be forced to be sold or banned on devices in the United States. So it's broad support here. If they can do that, saying Chinese communism is a danger to the American people, and therefore we get to do this, how many of them will it take to say, by the way, so is white supremacy, so is, you know, a MAGA, so is an America First agenda? And anybody that's promoting those things, that can also be banned from devices or from being accessed by the American consumer. So I'm very much concerned about the little development here in which people came together on both sides. And by the way, some came together on the other side. And when I say both sides, I mean both sides of the political aisle. Republicans and Democrats came together. But on the other side of the actual vote, too, the 65, that was also bipartisan. 50 Democrats and 15 Republicans said, you know, we probably shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't be banning this. By the way, the Chinese foreign ministry said they're not happy about this. They said the United States has never found evidence that TikTok threatens U.S. national security. But yet it has not stopped suppressing TikTok. And they said in the end, this will inevitably come back to bite the United States itself. That's a direct quote from the Chinese foreign ministry. And I think the Chinese foreign ministry is right. This is going to come back to bite us. Not necessarily by China, but by the fact that American First Amendment rights will be limited. The free speech that we enjoy as American citizens, the freedom of expression, the freedom online to not only say things, but to read things, to have things, you know, reach us. Instead of it being up to us to make our own minds up, the government's going to make up our minds what we can and cannot see based on the threat level as they determine it. You know what this reminds me of? 2022, Biden came out with this ridiculous disinformation governance board. Remember the idiot, in the world was her name, who sang her little Mary Poppins song or whatever about disinformation? And of course, we all stopped and said, whoa, the federal government is going to decide what's factual and what's not? What's information versus what's disinformation? And we are going to have what we can see and read and say and share limited by whether the government says it's real information or disinformation? The same government, by the way, that told us that the Hunter Biden laptop was not real, it was Russian disinformation. The same government, by the way, that told us that Donald Trump colluded with Russia in 2015 and 2016 to win the presidency. They're the ones who are going to decide what's information and what's disinformation. The outcry against that governance board was so swift, so strong, so fast that they pulled it, they killed it before it really even got off the ground. Because we can't trust the government to tell us what's real and what isn't real. Because the agenda, particularly in the Biden government, his regime declared right when he took office that he would have the most diverse cabinet and administration in American presidential history. And you know what that meant? That meant quality of work, qualifications for jobs was not going to be a priority. Making sure we have the right number of diverse individuals represented, whether they be cross-dressers, whether they be black or Hispanic or Asian or whatever the case might be, didn't matter. The only thing that matters is that diversity, that identity politics stuff, not the qualifications of these people. We know that. So if that's the government that's going to be deciding what's information and what's disinformation, I've got a problem, because they're going to allow things that say men can have babies, and they're going to allow things that essentially we know to be factually. They're going to allow things that say the climate is changing because of your SUV or your barbecue grill or your gas furnace or your gas stove, and we're going to stop that. And anybody pushes back against that, well, we're going to spike that. We're going to make sure people can't see that because it's against the best interest of the country and the consumers. Just like we banned that Chinese propaganda from being put forth to the American people by way of this phone app, when we banned TikTok, we're going to block the propaganda of the climate deniers. We're going to block the propaganda of the there are only two gender crowd. We're going to block the propaganda of all of those who believe that the vaccines were dangerous. You let the government start telling us what we can and can't see on our phones, we're just asking for trouble. So I'm very curious to see how this whole thing plays out. See if it gets to the Senate. See if Chuck Schumer brings it up for a vote. By the way, strangely, and I say this only because I really can never tell what Joe Biden is going to do or what he's thinking about doing. Biden has indicated he would sign this ban if it passes. President Trump, I don't know. President Trump doesn't seem to know what he thinks about it, because he was all for a ban on TikTok before, and he has done a complete 180. And President Trump has said that, you know, if we ban TikTok, it's going to drive more people to Facebook, and Facebook is an enemy of the people. He actually declared that. And I don't think he's wrong, by the way. I think Facebook is a very dangerous company. They have a lot of undue influence that they should not have over people and over ideas and over information, kind of like Google does. So but President Trump has taken both sides of this. So I don't know. Biden has said he would sign it. He would sign the legislation that was just passed by the House. If it passes the Senate, he said he would sign it. And I think that's a very alarming thing. I don't think any one man should have that kind of power. All right. We're going to take a time out here because it is now 9:25. On the other side of our bottom of the hour break, we're going to welcome Senator J.D. Vance. I'll be asking him about TikTok. He's also going to weigh in on the Senate primary. He's coming to town on Monday to rally for the Trump-endorsed candidate in that primary, Bernie Moreno. He's going to be in Parma on
Monday. For Judge, enlightening the sleeping masses and stoking the fire of the American dream. Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on The Answer.
Indeed. 9:34. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420, The Answer. It is Always Right Radio, and it's a short version today. We've got about another hour plus here because we do have some March Madness basketball KSU style coming up at 11 o'clock. So coming up on Monday, Senator J.D. Vance is going to be in Parma doing a rally with Bernie Moreno the day before the primary election on Tuesday, March 19th. And we're looking forward to that conversation, or I'm sorry, we're looking forward to talking to Senator Vance on Monday. But he was kind enough to join us again today as well. So we're waiting that connection to talk about not just the race in the Republican primary and the Senate race. He, of course, J.D. Vance is a strong, strong supporter of the America First agenda. He is a Trump supporter. President Trump, of course, has endorsed Bernie Moreno, so he and J.D. Vance are in lockstep on that in that effort. And so we're going to talk to him about why that is. And we're also going to talk to Senator Vance about a few of the pieces of legislation that he has been working very hard to get passed. As a matter of fact, one of them, an amendment to ban mask mandates, federal mask mandates, specifically written by Senator Vance, that one is being signed into law. The era of public health panic is over, he said in his amendment to prohibit COVID-19 mask mandates at the Department of Transportation, including the FAA, did pass the Senate, and Biden is soon going to be signing that one into law. So we're looking forward to a conversation with him about that. Also, Senator Vance, is pushing very, very hard to rebuild the American military, the munition stockpile, which is very, very low, rather than continuing to send. Never fails. Always when I'm ready to start an interview, that's when the coughing fit starts. My apologies. But at any rate, Senator Vance has a piece of legislation in which he is demanding that all of these munitions that are being sent to Ukraine, that has to take a backseat to American military preparedness first and foremost. Let's bring Senator Vance onto the program now, joining us on AM 1420, The Answer. Senator, good morning. Thanks for the time. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Bob. How you doing, man?
I was fine until my son gave me strep throat. so I'm fighting a little bit of that right now. Yeah, change of the weather didn't help either, but we're okay. Hey, Senator, thank you for the time. I know you're going to be in town on Monday with Bernie Moreno. So let's start there, and let's talk about why it is that you are firmly in the court with Bernie Moreno for this very, very contentious and closely fought Senate primary.
Yeah, well, let me just say a couple things. First of all, I think Bernie's right on the issues. Bob, he's you know, not trying to send endless resources to Ukraine. He's trying to focus on the southern border and rebuilding our own military. He's, I think, the strongest border hawk, and we need that at a time of great crisis. We don't need two guys who are saying that we're going to amnesty millions of illegal aliens. We need somebody who's saying, look, if you came here illegally, you need to be deported, or at least you need to be at the risk of deportation, or you're just going to invite more people to come in. And I think you need somebody who's going to actually serve as constituents and then go back home afterwards and not try to become a careerist. And that's all true of Bernie Moreno. The thing I'll say about Bernie, Bob, that makes me most fond of him is I knew him before politics. I knew him before, you know, he decided to throw his hat in the ring in the Senate race. And he's just a good guy. And when you're in the trenches in D.C., the thing that I've learned is that sometimes you can't trust people. Sometimes, unfortunately, you can't even trust the rhinos in the Republican Party. You need people in the foxhole who are good people, who are going to keep their word. And if you're negotiating with somebody, they're actually going to keep their end of the bargain. And that's Bernie Moreno to a T. So if you want to send a fighter to Washington, D.C., send Bernie. If you want to send a guy, if you think I'm doing a good job and you want to send somebody to help me out, then send Bernie Moreno. And, of course, I got to say, Trump endorsed him. Jim Jordan endorsed him. He really has become the consensus candidate of Ohio conservatives. We just got to get him over the finish line on Tuesday.
You know, it's interesting. As you pointed out, you and Jordan and Trump have all endorsed Bernie Moreno. Matt Dolan, state senator, has been endorsed by Governor Mike DeWine and former Senator Rob Portman. And he is suddenly surging, according to the latest polling. Emerson College and the Hill polling has him at 26%, Bernie Moreno at 23%, Frank LaRose at 15%. What do you think that means in a state where Mike DeWine is not necessarily very popular, but his chosen candidate is leading now?
Well, I'm skeptical of that. If you remember, Bob, the night before my primary, there were polls that had us losing, polls that had us up only one, and we won by almost double digits. And I think Bernie's going to win very convincingly on Tuesday. But we actually have to do the work. And look, the reason that the race is close right now, I think it's going to break in Bernie's direction these last 5 days. The reason it's close right now is because tens of millions of dollars have come in from out of state, some from in the state, and they've been attacking Bernie. And why have they been attacking Bernie? It really is one issue. I hate to say it, Bob. It's the Ukraine question. If you look at sort of why, and I, you know, Mike DeWine, he and I are friendly, and Rob Portman and I are friendly, but if you look at their endorsement statements and what they've said, they said explicitly, this is about a guy who puts Ukraine first, and they want a candidate who is going to sort of rubber stamp the D.C. establishment consensus on this issue, not somebody who's going to fight back against it. And that's a huge, huge problem for me. But it's also meant that this guy's gotten a lot of support from, I think, you know, the wrong quarter. So, look, I think that we have a real opportunity here to send the right guy to the United States Senate. That's Bernie Marino. And I think you can just tell by who's supporting him and who's supporting his opponent what kind of senator he's going to be and where his loyalties are going to lie.
We're talking with Senator J.D. Vance this morning on AM 1420. The Answer, talking a little bit about this very, very tight primary race. 32%, according to the survey we just talked about, are still undecided. So they're going to have to figure it out between Bernie Moreno, Frank LaRose, and Matt Dolan. I'm glad you brought up Ukraine. And you're right, by the way. Governor DeWine literally said that the stance that these candidates have on Ukraine is a big, big reason why he decided to endorse Matt Dolan. I'm going to read a quote here from you. America's military stockpiles are dangerously low. Joe Biden has spent 2 years sending more weapons to Ukraine than we're capable of manufacturing, and it's putting our national security at risk. Is that the reason why you have the stance you have on Ukraine?
That's exactly why, Bob. Look, I don't like Russia's aggression. I don't think that Russia should have invaded Ukraine. But we have to be honest about our limitations here, and we don't make enough weapons. These guys shift our manufacturing base to China, to Mexico, for 30, 40 years, and now we're in a state where we don't have enough weapons manufacturing ability to defend ourselves, to defend the Ukrainians, and defend everybody else. We have to focus on America's national security interests, and I think that's China. I think that's making sure that if, God forbid, the Chinese invaded Taiwan, we could provide a robust support there, and that means that if somebody did something to our own homeland, that we could provide a robust defense. We cannot support four different wars in four different corners of the world. We just don't have the munitions manufacturing ability to do it. This is not hypothetical, by the way, Bob. You know, I've been making this argument for 2 years, but now you have Pentagon officials, you have the Biden administration, you have multiple people saying we are dangerously low on core military equipment, things like artillery shells and missile systems. We've given so much of this stuff to Ukraine that we don't have enough for our own core national security. So what do we do? What should statesmen do given the world we confront in 2024? Answer, rebuild our military and focus on our own problem. That may not be nice or may not make us feel good inside, but the job of America's leaders is to put our own citizens first, not to engage in moral crusades in every corner of the world.
Yeah, well said. Completely agree with that. I'm glad you did mention China, though, because it begs the question about TikTok. Yesterday, the House passed overwhelmingly this ban on TikTok or the forced sale from the company that owns it that is pretty much run by the Chinese Communist Party. If this comes to the Senate to a floor vote, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's a good question, Bob, and I'll be honest with you. I haven't dug into it enough. Let me sort of give you a sense of what I'm trying to work through actually today with my staff to try to understand this. So I agree with you. I don't like TikTok. I don't like the fact the Chinese Communist Party controls it. That makes me inclined to vote for the legislation. The counter argument here is you want to make sure that the way the legislation gives the authority to the president isn't so broad that it could go after any number of conservative media sites, right? So when people say foreign influence, well, sometimes people say that Tucker Carlson is under Russian influence, which of course is absurd. I know Tucker well. That's not true, but you don't want to give the Biden administration authority to shut down people like Tucker. I don't think this bill does that, but that's kind of what I'm trying to understand is the unintended consequences before we vote for this thing and set the country down the wrong path. So I think I'm going to vote for it, but I'm still not decided yet.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about the precedent here. Because if the government can say, and the president has this broad authority to say, well, this is Chinese propaganda and you know, putting Americans' information at risk to the Chinese, well, why won't they say that about any conservative platform? And if you ask me, if you give him a green light to shut down TikTok, he can shut down Elon Musk's new free speech version of Twitter as well, couldn't he?
Yeah, so that's the concern. Now, what I think is true about this legislation, again, we have not dug into this. These are the questions that I'm trying to answer. So you kind of got me at a good time because I'm thinking about a lot of this stuff. Is I believe that the law narrowly defines foreign influence as a foreign nation actually, or a company in a foreign nation owns at least 20% of the stock of that company. So it's not foreign influence as in Elon Musk is under foreign influence. Of course, he isn't. Or Tucker Carlson is, but it's at least 20% of the stock of the company is owned by, you know, a foreign actor. And if it's narrowly defined enough, I think you can avoid setting a bad precedent while also solving a core American national security challenge. But that's really what we're digging into, Bob, is trying to understand that issue.
I respect and appreciate the fact that you are going to look into all of those, because I'm with you. I'm of two minds on it to a certain extent, but I'm really worried about the precedent. So I'm glad you're going to give that some deep thought before you decide if this comes to a vote, what you are going to do. Last thing on legislation for you, Senator, the ban on federal mask mandates. This is something you were very passionate about, and it looks like Joe Biden is going to sign this, right?
Yeah, it is, actually. It's one of these things, you know, Bob, where, you know, obviously with the Biden administration and Chuck Schumer in charge of the Senate, the main thing that we're trying to do as conservative senators is just prevent the Biden administration from doing as much damage as possible to, you know, protect the interests of the people of Ohio as much as possible. But occasionally you're able to get some good things done, too. And we were able to get this federal mask mandate signed or at least passed out of the House and the Senate. Basically, it just applies on transportation, so airlines aren't going to force you to wear a mask. Amtrak isn't going to force you to wear a mask. And that's, you know, obviously a big part of the big mask wars over the last couple of years. I think, you know, we're at a point where we can say masks really don't stop the spread of any respiratory virus. And we ought to allow people to make these decisions themselves, not have them forced by the government or by these companies. So it's a big win for individual liberty, and it is a good example that even with a Biden administration, you can occasionally get some good victories done.
Do you have faith, Senator Vance, that we are going to have a free and fair election in November?
Faith is probably not the way I put it, Bob. Look, I have concerns. I think that a lot of the shenanigans of 2020 really are built around the combination of mail-in balloting plus them changing the rules for which ballots were accepted. I don't think they're going to be able to pull the same thing again. I think that in a lot of places, the balloting rules are more restrictive because we're not in the middle of a pandemic. I think it's going to be hard to reimpose the sort of, you know, loosey-goosey, everything goes rules. And I also think the Republican Party is just more awake to it. If they try to pull the exact same thing, we actually have an army of lawyers ready to prevent it. You always worry about the thing you're not seeing, right? And I think the Democrats have basically decided they can't win a free and fair election. I think they're going to use their allies in big tech. They're going to use their allies at sort of local municipalities, especially in big cities, to try to do whatever they can to get whatever unfair advantage they can. But I don't think it will be as bad in 24 as it was in 2020. That was sort of a one-trick pony. It's hard to replay that thing again in 2024. So we need to be on the lookout for it, and we importantly need to be on the lookout for other things, and I think a lot of us are, but I feel better about 24 than I did in 2020. You may remember, Bob, we've had this conversation where Tucker Carlson, speaking of, called me, I believe it was July of 2020, and said, hey, they're changing all the rules for which ballots count, and this is a big, big problem. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't even thought of that. And I think we were completely caught flat-footed. The RNC was completely caught flat-footed. That's not going to happen again, but we still have to be vigilant.
Yeah, we absolutely do. President Trump is winning by a wide margin in a lot of national polls and in the battleground states and in a head-to-head with Joe Biden. And that's the reason I'm wondering what they're going to do to try to stop him this time around and whether or not we can have a free and fair election. Senator Vance, I know you've got a busy schedule. Thank you for the time today. I look forward to talking to you again on Monday.
Thanks, Bob. Take care.
Thank you. That's Senator J.D. Vance on AM 1420, The Answer. He's a very busy guy. He's going to have to be digging in, as he said, into the TikTok question, because there's a chance that this could come up for a vote on the Senate side very, very quickly, just as it was passed yesterday overwhelmingly by the House. And then he's got a lot of work he's doing in this campaign for Bernie Moreno. Bernie Moreno, as the Trump-endorsed candidate, is enjoying some support from some of the most popular conservatives in America. Now, whether that'll make him win or not is anybody's guess, or, you know, we'll find out. But just on Monday, we spoke with Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota. She was in town in Columbus rallying for Bernie Moreno. When I asked her live on the air why, she said, well, in large part because President Trump asked me to. I support Bernie Moreno, she said, and so does President Trump. And President Trump asked me to come here and help make sure he wins. And so Kristi Noem in Ohio, campaigning for Bernie Moreno. Now you've got a very popular conservative Republican senator, J.D. Vance, who's going to be in Parma on Monday. Also, excuse me, campaigning for and supporting Bernie Moreno. President Trump is going to be in Dayton on Saturday, and he is going to be rallying for Bernie Moreno. So this is a very, very overwhelming full court press by the conservative leadership of the America First, you know, kind of campaign, if you will, all pushing and promoting Bernie Moreno. Meanwhile, there is a new story developing of a left-wing Democrat-affiliated group pushing and promoting Bernie Moreno as well, because they feel like he is the most easy to beat in the race against Sherrod Brown. So that's an awful lot of stuff working from a lot of different directions involving Bernie Moreno and the Senate race. I'm going to take a time out right now. I'm going to come back and tell you a little bit more about what we learned from an article that dropped late last night by Politico about an 11th-hour push by
Approve this message.
Keeping you informed among the uninformed. Always Right Radio with Bob France on The Answer.
Okay. So let me kind of bring you up to speed where we are. This article dropped late last night, well, 9:30 last night, 9:45, something like that, on Politico. And it's a very interesting look at this Senate primary between Moreno and LaRose and Dolan. And the headline is Dems launch 11th hour meddling operation in Ohio GOP Senate primary. An outside group affiliated with Senate Democrats is running ads touting the former president's endorsement of Bernie Moreno in one of the key races for the majority. And here's what it says. Duty and Country PAC, a group affiliated with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, is going on air with a TV ad that heavily touts Moreno's support from Trump and calls him too conservative for Ohio. It begins airing today and is set to run through the primary on Tuesday. The group is funded by Senate Majority PAC, the top Democratic outside group focused on Senate races. The apparent goal of the ad, says Politico, is to boost Moreno with GOP voters, and their interference in the race is a sign that they believe he would be the weakest candidate in the general election. Ohio, one of three Democratic-held seats up for election in states Trump won in 2020, is one of the most critical races in the Senate majority. When Ohio voters head to their polling place, they deserve to know the truth about Bernie Moreno, says Senate Majority PAC spokesperson Hannah Menchoff. And the truth is that Moreno is a MAGA extremist who embraced Donald Trump just like he embraced his policies to ban abortion nationwide and repeal the ACA. That's Obamacare. The spot, which will air on broadcast TV stations across the state, says Moreno would support a national abortion ban and a repeal of Obamacare. Donald Trump needs Bernie Moreno, Ohio doesn't, says the spot. It is backed by a $1.9 million ad buy as of Wednesday night. Polling shows a tight race for the primary, as we pointed out. Dolan, one of only three candidates who did not seek Trump's endorsement, actually topped the Emerson survey 26-23-15 over Moreno and LaRose, respectively. So this is a Democrat group going out there to actually promote Bernie Moreno with the belief that he would be the easiest for Sherrod Brown to beat. Now, here's a Breitbart spin on this. Battle lines drawn in Ohio. Establishment goes all in for Dolan, while America First movement rallies for Trump-endorsed Bernie Moreno. The establishment is going all in for U.S. Senate candidate Matt Dolan, while the America First movement is overwhelmingly backing conservative candidate. That's why J.D. Vance was just on with me, and businessman Bernie Moreno. The primary is less than a week away as Moreno, backed by former President Trump and top conservatives in the movement, face off against former Globalist Institute fellow State Senator Matt Dolan. Dolan has a controversial history. He once served as a fellow for the Aspen Institute, a Soros-funded globalist institution, which The Economist described as a mountain retreat for the liberal elite. He has also accused those of wanting to end the war in Ukraine as being appeasers of Vladimir Putin, appearing to put that issue above securing the United States' southern border, and featuring this audio clip of Matt Dolan.
But we cannot allow the dysfunction of the Biden administration at the border to interfere with our responsibilities to Ukraine, not only our responsibilities to Ukraine, but our responsibilities to our allies and to us as Americans.
So this is a clip that is making the rounds in the conservative America First camp about Matt Dolan, that he says we have a responsibility to Ukraine. And I remember when I first heard that clip a couple of weeks ago or whatever it was, it blew me away, quite frankly, because I didn't think we had a responsibility to anything except American citizens. Do we have a choice as to whether or not we want to send money to foreign countries? Yes. Is that our choice? It has been. Is it our responsibility? It is not. And I think our own border should take precedence over the Ukrainian question. At any rate, in 2020, Matt Dolan, this is again from Breitbart, backed the idea of racism being considered a public health crisis. Dolan is now backed by Rob Portman, as you know, and Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, who went on to say, and this is the last part for this segment, Governor Mike DeWine has admitted the reason he has given his endorsement to Matt Dolan over Bernie Moreno and Frank LaRose is because he is much more committed to sending money to Ukraine. A direct quote, "I think all three of them can win in the fall," said DeWine, "but I think he is in a much stronger position, frankly," he was talking about Matt Dolan, "and he is," quote, "more focused on national security, such as voting on Ukraine aid." DeWine thinks that sending money to Ukraine is a factor in American national security, and that's why he supports Matt Dolan.
Elect Frank LaRose. Proven courage. Paid for by Patriotic Bank, a 501c4 committee not coordinated with any candidate or campaign committee.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, onward we roll. It is 8 minutes after 10 o'clock. Thanks for being with us. If you just tuned in, you missed the conversation in the first hour with J.D. Vance. Senator Vance is in Ohio working very hard to get Bernie Moreno elected to at least become the Republican nominee, the primary on Tuesday. It's a very tight race between Moreno and Dolan and LaRose, as you know. So J.D. Vance came on with us. So you're going to want to hear that conversation later, which you can do at whkradio.com on the podcast page. And if you also, if you just tune in, you don't realize we are on a short show today because we have college basketball for you. March Madness is, of course, underway. We've got Kent State basketball coming up in just about 1 hour. So this is our last hour of the broadcast today. Let's make it count. Let's bring in our good friend, Dr. Everett Piper, for his regular Thursday commentary. Dr. Piper is a former university president, a best-selling author, a twice-weekly columnist for the Washington Times. He is also a podcast host called The Rebellion, and he is a county commissioner in Osage County, Oklahoma. Dr. Piper, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Good to be on.
So Joe Biden yelled you into prayer is what happened, right, on Thursday night?
Yeah.
He yelled at you so much, you said, I can't do anything now, you know, other than yell back at him. So instead, you fell to your knees in prayer. At least that's what it read like in your weekly column. Tell me about your thoughts on what happened with the State of the Union and why that was the response.
Well, I mean, he is an angry man, isn't he? I mean, he's the old man yelling on his front yard at all the kids that go by. I just can't. There are times where you just have to pinch yourself to. Hopefully, it's not real. But anyway, that said, I really felt like this was a State of the Union that said to the American people and to the world that the state of our union, the state of our culture, the state of our nation, the state of who we are as a people is those that celebrate the death of our babies, the debauchery of our children, and the destruction of our culture. That really, that's what his outline for his State of the Union address was. So what do we do? What do we do as common sense Christians when we hear the leader of the free world, our president, celebrating the murder of babies, the debauchery of children, and the destruction of our culture, by and large, the tearing down of our borders and our boundaries? You go to the Bible. I just have to go to the Bible, and we're told that we need to pray. So I decided I'd write my column this week for the Washington Times as a prayer in the face of this wickedness. And I use that word intentionally. Because I was writing the column, I wondered, is that too strong? And I thought, no, it's not too strong. Because what this man is advocating is wicked. So what do? We pray for forgiveness. As a nation, as a people, we should be asking God to forgive us for sacrificing our babies. Forgive us for destroying our school. And forgive us for diminishing the value of marital fidelity so that our children don't even know how to define it any longer. Forgive us for teaching the generation that follows us, our progeny, that they have the right to define life for the generation that follows them. They're not God. They don't have the right to define life, but we're teaching them that they do. Forgive us for elevating comfort over character and money over morality. Forgive us for making justice unjust and injustice just, for reversing definitions, for celebrating lies rather than pursuing what's true and right and real. Forgive us for dumbing down the definition of the Imago Dei, the image of God, you and me, to the Imago dog, and telling people that they're defined by their desires. Animals are defined by their desires, but people aren't. Forgive us for pretending that we're pro-woman, and then we turn around and subjugate women to the dysphoric delusions of men. And forgive us for boasting of freedom while we live in bondage to our own deception. Forgive us for separating head from heart, fact from faith, belief from behavior. Forgive us for confusing liberty with license and freedom with fascism. You know, I go on and on. The bottom line is we need to pray that God withhold his hand of judgment. I think it was John MacArthur out on the West Coast who has said repeatedly, if God doesn't judge America, he owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology. And how can you dispute that when we continue to elect people, and I'll go back and repeat, that murder babies, debauch children, demean women, insult the dignity of the Imago Dei, tear down our borders and destroy our culture? How can we claim to be a virtuous people if we elect such vile and wicked policies and leaders? So this was a prayer, and a sincere prayer, that I wrote for the Washington Times this last week.
So let's take that to the next level then with respect to the election part of this. You know, if we elect these types of, you know, people and these types of policies and so on and so forth. You sent me an article, not one that you wrote. This one was written by somebody named Tim Stratton in a Freethinking Ministries piece. And its headline is "A Moral Obligation to Vote for an Immoral Candidate." And it's about Donald Trump. Let's dig into that for a moment, if we can, Dr. Piper, because I think your prayer column that you wrote is spot on, particularly given the gravity of the situation that we're in right now and what was presented to us by that State of the Union address. Our choices are that guy, that angry guy, or this guy here who you have described as, you've described as being immoral in the past. And, you know, we all know that he's got flaws. But this is a time of choosing, and there are two flawed candidates here, but with very, very different outlooks and very different potential outcomes for us. Give me your thoughts on the immoral candidate and our moral obligation to support him.
Well, and this is a question for serious Christians, and we get browbeat by this from the left, because they say, well, you guys talk about morality, and you talk about character, and you talk about virtue, and then you turn around and vote for that guy? And I understand the objection. I have many conservative Christian friends who are in a quandary right now. Some of them have boldly said, I won't vote for Donald Trump. And I think that's a mistake. Now, how can I say that when I just got done praying for forgiveness for our nation being immoral? And I don't have much patience for people that make Donald Trump out to be a saint. He's not a saint. I mean, let's just cut to the chase. He's a flawed man. So am I. And so is everybody else. But is there a scale of sin, a scale of morality here? Yes, there is. And I equate it, I didn't write this or give this to you, but I equate it to the old TV series MASH. Mm-hmm. The MASH, the Mobile Army Surgical Hospital, and the doctors therein were obligated to make triage decisions. It wasn't a perfect world. War is ugly. There's blood. There's carnage. And the doctors, frankly, resent the situation that their government has put them in. But all that aside, all the immorality and the carnage and the evil and the sin aside, you're still there and have an obligation to make triage decisions to save the greatest number of people, of wounded, possible, recognizing that you won't save all of them. Some will die. But you still are obligated to not sit on the sidelines and watch everybody die. You make triage decisions in an imperfect world to save as many as possible. And I really think that's analogous to what we're dealing with politically right now. We don't have a perfect world. The options are, you know, both options could be criticized. But there's clearly one party that believes in the dignity of women, the identity and life and liberty of children, believes that it's wrong to amputate functioning organs from minors. There's one party that stands against that wickedness and evil, and the other party celebrates it. They wave flags in favor of it. So is it a triage decision where it's not perfect and there's blood in there? You get all bloody, you get all messy as you're trying to save some lives. Sure, it's triage, but you still have to do it. And this article is pointing out to us that if you want to compare evil, then you have to recognize that at least Donald Trump stands against Marxism, which is one of the greatest ideological evils to inflict our planet ever. That hundreds of millions of people have died at the hands of Marxism, and the left is celebrating Marxism right now. They're leaning into critical theory, which is grounded in Marxism. It's a Marxian theory. They're leaning into it. Diversity, equity, and inclusion is Marxist. Social emotional learning is Marxist. CRT is Marxist. And the Democrats are celebrating this, and Donald Trump is standing against it. So if it were on nothing else but that, I'd vote for Donald Trump, because at least he stands against the evil of Marxism. And in addition to that, he stands against the evil of abortion. And even though I question his morality at times, at least he seems to be taking the side of religious freedom and allowing women to have their own bathroom and shower and sport. I'm voting for him.
very, very well said. And, you know, what's really aggravating and frustrating and, quite frankly, disturbing is the number of Republicans who have declared, no, I don't care what you just said. I'm not going to triage my decision here. I'm not going to vote for this man no matter what. There's a article that, or not an article, a story that I just came across today. This is very new, dated March 12th, so yesterday, or Tuesday. New $50 million campaign showcases former Trump voters refusing to support him again. It's a group called RVAT, Republican Voters Against Trump, online at rvat.org. I've already have my crew are reaching out to these people. I want to get them on the radio to see how they can justify this, but they're essentially, this site contains more than 100 video testimonials of Trump's own voters making the case against him in key swing states to stop him from winning again. Dr. Piper, these people, again, while they hold themselves up in a holier than thou, at least that's how it appears to me, trying to virtue signal to everybody, I've got a conscience, and this immoral man, as you just described and that article describes, will not get me to vote for him again. Are they aware of what they're doing if they don't? Are they aware that they are voting something that is truly evil, voting for something that is truly evil in its place? That's very troubling to me.
They've got blood on their hands. I mean, they really do. I mean, I'm very angry with Donald Trump that he criticized the heartbeat bill in Florida and elsewhere. I think that's wrong. I thought, what are you doing? You're out of your mind. I mean, you're basically throwing a bone back to the Planned Parenthood and the pro-abortion strategy. But he did. I mean, he criticized the heartbeat bill. I was very disappointed in Donald Trump when he hosted his rainbow trans LGBTQIA party at Mar-a-Lago. He did. That's a fact. However, to vote against him right now throws all of those things over to the enemy, and it's just going to explode. It'll explode to the negative. So even though Donald Trump is not taking the principled stand on abortion that he should, at least his policies thus far have saved more babies than not.
Amen.
Is he perfect? No. If there were a pro-life candidate that were squeaky clean, I'd vote for him. But there isn't. And therefore, I'm not going to have the blood on my hands of the hundreds of thousands of babies that are saved under Donald Trump's policies versus the Democrats. Likewise on women's rights and treating women like they're a biological fact rather than a fantasy. Donald Trump has a history of sexual infidelity. I don't like it. It's wrong. It's sinful. But his policies honor the dignity and identity of a woman, whereas the other party disparages it and actually appoints people to the cabinet or to major administrative positions, dudes that are dressing up like women. I mean, they've got blood on their hands. These people that are going to campaign against Donald Trump are throwing a victory over to Planned Parenthood and the radical left and Marxism. Let's go back to the main point of the article I shared with you. Mm-hmm. You're basically saying, let the Marxists win, because we're not going to dirty our hands by voting for Donald Trump. Well, how's that one going to work for you when it comes to freedom and the lives of people that will be sacrificed as a result of you taking the high ground? I don't respect it.
I don't either. And like I said, we're reaching out to them. I want to try to get them on the air and try to talk some sense into them and see exactly what they say. But they're not saying, as I look at this, and apparently these ads are going to run, this $50 million ad buy is going to be running in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, perceived to be the most important of all the battleground states. And they're going to work to tell people not necessarily to vote for Biden, but to not vote for Trump. And they don't understand, or maybe they do, that if you don't vote for Trump and you don't vote at all, you are voting for Biden. Or if you decide to go third and vote for RFK Jr., you know, he's about to announce his running mate, I guess, in the next week or two. The Democrats don't have any such problems. They don't have any such conundrums. They are like, we are all in with Joe Biden. Or if it was Kamala Harris or Gavin Newsom, we are all in. They don't suffer same problems that we do, where we sit here and try to moralize away our important responsibilities and obligations here to protect the greatest amount of good. That's what this is about.
Yes, you need to vote for the greatest amount of freedom that you can get out of any given election. And there are times when neither candidate is necessarily where you want them to be. But there's a difference between the two, and you're obligated, I believe, as responsible, patriotic citizens, especially if you're Christian, to elevate freedom as the highest good in a given election, because God is a God of freedom. He doesn't force us to do anything. And we need to make sure that women have freedom, that children have the freedom to live, and women have the freedom to their own bathroom, and that people in general have the freedom to their private property, and to get the government out of our business rather than inviting the camel's nose in the tent, because when he gets his nose in the tent, his butt follows and it's a mess. We don't want to vote for less freedom. You vote for more.
Yeah. You know, in 2012, I wasn't thrilled with the idea of voting for Mitt Romney, but I campaigned for Mitt Romney like my life depended upon it, because I felt like it did at that time, because I knew exactly what we had going from the first term around with Barack Obama. So you don't have to be in love with the person that you are voting for, but you absolutely better start thinking about the greatest amount of good, the greatest, as you just said, the greatest amount of freedom that you can get from any one candidate. And I'm sorry if he's not perfect, and I'm sorry if he's not the most moralistic person that you've ever met. But the fact is, his policies, you're right about that, Dr. Piper, his policies are a better prescription for this country. And that's something people need to reconcile. Dr. Piper, thank you so much for the time. As always, we appreciate your great work. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. All right, it's 10:25. We're going to get out here so we can come back in. We've got one segment to go, and it's going to be with Kellyanne Conway, former senior advisor to the
Candidates Committee. ClubForGrowthAction.org. Keeping you the uninformed. Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on The Answer.
Okay, 10:32. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420, The Answer. A great conversation with Dr. Everett Piper. If you missed Senator J.D. Vance in hour number one as well, don't forget to catch that on the flip side. When the show's over, it'll be up about an hour after that at whkradio.com on the podcast page. It's my pleasure now to welcome back to our program. It's been a little while since I have talked to her, but it is always great to talk politics with Kellyanne Conway, former senior advisor to the President of the United States, who's got her eye on some really, really important primary races here in Ohio on Tuesday. Kellyanne Conway, welcome back to Cleveland. How are you?
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you. Cleveland.
Yeah, thank you so much for the time. So we don't have a ton of time here. I want to dive right into some of these important races and then get your thoughts on the presidential race as well. But we've got a Senate primary that is very, very contentious here. Matt Dolin is a state senator. Frank LaRose is our Secretary of State. Bernie Moreno is a popular businessman. He's got the Trump, Jordan, and Vance trifecta of endorsements. But we're looking for a way to beat Sherrod Brown and try to take the majority back in the Senate. How do you analyze this race?
Well, that race is a fascinating one because Sherrod Brown is almost the last liberal standing in any type of position of power in the state of Ohio, and that's unfortunate. He sort of ekes it out and squeaks it out every 6 years. I don't think he's had the strongest opponents the last several cycles. But if you make the case about Sherrod Brown, if you make the election about Sherrod Brown, he is a doctrinaire, liberal, radical, left of center, grab your tax dollars, hurting moms and dads, moms and pops, against school choice and opportunity scholarships and charter schools and vouchers, et cetera. He's against you keeping more of your hard-earned money. He obviously has done nothing like the rest of his party on the border except open it up so that we have over 8 million people here now. 8.8 million is, now that's the number, sir, that's higher than the population of 39 states in this country. It's insane. So Sherrod Brown needs to be the issue there. Bernie Moreno is a great match for that, in my view, because he's got an excellent history. He's an outsider, job creator, businessman, born in South America, be the first United States senator, as I understand it, that has that special designation. I always love when that's a Republican because it makes the other side go crazy. And I think that President Trump, who did not endorse Moreno in 2022, eventually late in the game, but eventually endorsed J.D. Vance, to whom he remains has a very good relationship, and he's been a wonderful senator. He's also endorsed Bernie Moreno. Bernie Moreno has done something, did something really smart in 2022 that others should take notice. He dropped out of the primary, and then he endorsed J.D. Vance, gave him contributions, and then he played the role of Tim Ryan in debate prep for J.D. Vance. Like, instead of harumphing and taking all your marbles out of your sandbox and going the other way, you got to help defeat these radicals who are destroying this country. And Bernie did that, and I think over a series of time, which is most important for the president's endorsement. So you have a lot of hot races there. I'm also looking
We do.
At, Reggie Soltis in the in Ohio 6. He's running against somebody who is very proud to talk about the bathroom bills he's sponsored. Yippee. That's weird. And I think Soltis is another one. He's a job creator, outsider to politics, but outsider to the, quote, system that's hurting the forgotten man, forgotten woman, forgotten child in Ohio 6 and elsewhere in the state, across the state. And he's someone unafraid to actually articulate an America First policy agenda that he knows was working for those 4 years of President Trump, and he wants to work with that again. I think for candidates like Reggie and others and Bernie, it's super smart to say, look, I'm not just going to be there to add to their ranks of the majority, et cetera. I'm there to be a strong, solid, reliable vote for the America First agenda, because if President Trump gets elected to a second term, then he's going to want to move very quickly. And the way you do that, sure, through some executive orders off the bat, but the way you do that is through Congress. And so I think the greatest argument we have is, two great arguments, but one is, give me the people I need who are going to be reliable, who aren't going to change their minds and be equivocal and say, oh, gee, this or oh, gee, that, or CNN won't like me if I don't vote against this or against that. Because we've seen that, and some of them either have retired or are retiring, actually. And we need these solid votes to get this agenda passed. This country is suffering. Ohio could be doing better. The other big argument, I think, is that a vote for Joe Biden and the Democrats is a vote for Kamala Harris. You vote for Sherrod Brown, you're voting for Kamala Harris, potentially for 12 years. Everybody is scared by that, including Democrats.
Well, I never put it in those terms. That's terrifying when you say that about the 12-year party. But you're right. It could be that way if she were to assume the presidency and then have a couple of terms to do on her own. So that is frightening. We're talking with Kellyanne Conway, former senior advisor to President Donald J. Trump. We're talking about Ohio's primary. Broader now, looking at the majorities that are up for grabs now. Now with Ken Buck stepping aside, not that he was much of a conservative vote anyway. But, you know, it's only, what, a two-seat majority or whatever the number is now, and we're still fighting to try to take back the Senate majority. We've changed leadership at the RNC. What are your thoughts on Michael Wadley and Laura Trump taking over, and how will that impact the broader fight for control of Congress?
I've worked with both of them for a very long time. They are serious leaders and great managers, and they will accomplish their goals of raising more money. And I think my opinion may be a little bit different than others. I think they want to expand upon, not rip out root and branch, expand upon some of the very significant accomplishments of the RNC, the permanent election integrity unit, the dozens and dozens of lawsuits that have been filed to just clarify these crazy new left-of-center voting rules in each of the states, something Michael Wadley, as general counsel to the RNC, knows an awful lot about. And then get money from people. Now that Donald Trump is the nominee and you can have the joint committee, you can raise more money through the joint committee, which is a combination of the RNC and the Trump campaign. And that allows people to stroke pretty significant checks so that we can somewhat compete with the left. But I also thought the community centers were a good idea, where they were put in places where you're reaching out to many minority communities that for years were told you have to be a Democrat, you must vote Democrat, and they're saying, well, that hasn't helped me at all. Is there an alternative? Also, I just think the data and digital at the RNC has improved. So hopefully those who are there, and that also includes Chris LaCivita, who was, co-managing the Trump campaign with Susie Wiles. He's now there as the chief of staff. I hope they'll build on what's working and not try to add more uncertainty at a time when, the convention's around the corner and Joe Biden and the Democrats are going to spend probably $2 billion to destroy Donald Trump.
That is incredible to think about, but you're right. They're willing to do that, or they will be anyway. Kellyanne Conway, you played such an instrumental role in President Trump's first victory and in his term in office. Will you have any role? Will you have any consulting or coordinating in any way whatsoever now that we have the rematch officially set with the delegate counts for Biden and President Trump? Will you be back at all?
As President Trump might say, we'll see. We'll see. I think that offer is on the table. In other words, I'm just trying to find my best and highest use to defeat Biden and Harris. I do have a Fox News contributor contract and a company apart from that. But I'm there to help. And I appreciate my relationship with President Trump. He appreciates the fact that I'm one of the few people at a high level who don't have scandals, subpoenas, indictments, or investigations from maybe a previous regime, previous time. And I appreciate the fact that the reason for his resurgence, sure, the prosecution, persecution as prosecution has has crystallized it. But what really created it is the same bias in hiring that each of us have when we hire or are hired. We like to hire people to do a job who have already done that job. So we can see the result. We can talk to the references. We can compare this versus that, X versus Y. And here, that's what people are doing. They're saying, my life under Joe Biden and my life with Donald Trump. And I'm very proud to have been his campaign manager in 2016, highly critical of his 2020 campaign. I think a lot of the mistakes there were avoidable. And also his 2024 campaign has been very disciplined, very smart, very strategic, and not making the mistakes of 2020. I want to say to everybody who's listening, I see it as a great combination of the hunger, swagger, underestimated, underdog status of Donald Trump from 2016, overlaid with a presidential record of accomplishments, particularly pre-COVID. And that, to me, is the 2024 campaign in a nutshell. But look, this, to your point, and I want to help wherever I can help best, because I think we all just have to, instead of complaining about this, that, and the other, instead of complaining, kvetching, and conversing about what offends us, we ought to be voting according to what affects us. And we already know Joe Biden has affected us in a terribly negative way. The vast majority of independents agree. More and more Hispanics and African Americans and suburban women and young people agree. So let's get on board here. I will say this, though, that our presidential elections, let's remind ourselves, they are not decided by millions of votes across the country. They are decided by tens of thousands of votes across three or four key swing states. They're really decided across, like, probably 25 counties, tops. So all that is my background. I will say put me in coach at some point, I'm sure. But, again, there's an argument to be made for going in or staying out, but being helpful either way.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, that's a great analysis. I appreciate that. I appreciate the honesty that you are looking to help in any way you can. But as you say, you are under contract with media agencies, so you may or may not be able to do it and do both of those things at the same time. But I'm sure you will be summoned from the bullpen at some point to assist President Trump. And, of course, I know your contributions would be very, very much welcomed. Last question for you. You mentioned you were highly critical of the 2020 campaign. But I still think absent COVID and absent all of the shenanigans, he won the race. Your thoughts on that?
So I think the campaign never, I wrote about this extensively in my book, not as a way to settle scores, because what do I care about the losers? I care that they had $1.6 billion and proved the old adage to be true that the fastest way to make a small fortune is to have a very large one and waste most of it, and never adapted to what the number one concern for many seniors and women and others in the country was, which was COVID. They were scared. I don't care what people say now. I should have got the vaccine, the mask, blah, blah, blah. Go back and remember how everybody felt. Because I'll say people were home with their kids and their spouses complaining about that. And I was at the White House every day in the Situation Room trying to get this right, trying to help the president, the vice president, and the nation just to figure it out as a layperson, as a non-medical person. We were there every day trying to get this right. So I say this because they still thought the economy would be the number one issue. They ran a Super Bowl ad for...
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.